Hey there, check out my limited podcast series brought to you by Hello Hot Flash called Christian Women and Menopause, strategies for midlife women who want to know what the Bible says about menopause symptoms like stress, lack of confidence, anxiety, and depression. This 21-episode limited series will drop one per day starting Tuesday, April 23rd. Check out Christian Women and Menopause on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hey there, I'm Stephanie Shaw. Welcome to the Hello Hot Flash podcast, where midlife women can learn from guest experts and authors who discuss menopause and all that comes with this new chapter in our lives. Hello Hot Flash, where we learn to control the change and not let the change control us. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Hello Hot Flash, where we help you control the midlife change. Our guest today is Dr. Ariana Scholes Douglas. Dr. Douglas is a menopause revolutionist, author, speaker, and personal coach specializing in supporting businesswomen entering their midlife transition. It's been a while since we talked, like a long while, hasn't it?
It has. Time has gone really fast.
It has. We're almost at the end of the month already. It's just nuts, but I'm so
happy. Yeah, that's crazy. I can't believe it's already mid-January. That's ridiculous.
It is. I'm so happy to have an opportunity to speak with you. Thank you so much for sending me a copy of your book. It was amazing. I'm reading through, learning things. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. All of the myths around menopause, because there are so many, and I can't wait for you to help everyone uncover those myths. So I want to start the conversation, though, by kicking it off, you telling us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to this place in your journey.
Yeah, so I am an obstetrician gynecologist, and I went into actually maternal fetal medicine, which is high risk obstetrics. I did that for the first 20 years. I've been practicing now about 30 years and had really not even considered the gynecology aspect until I think I actually was starting to go through menopause. I didn't know that's what was happening at the time, but I was just feeling a sense of restlessness and just discontent and just like trying to figure out what's next and why I was feeling some of the things, including and not really even recognizing I was having hot flashes or the night sweats, the irritability. Like I just thought I was being, you know, just bitchy. And then a few years in to menopause, I finally realized that that's what was happening, and really just started to take an assessment of the mental, the spiritual, and all the physical changes I was going through. And then I just kind of realized, like, wow, I'm a gynecologist, and I had no concept, no clue about this phase of life and what happens and when it happens and how it happens, not to mention all the hormonal changes. And I'm a gynecologist, so I just thought that if I don't have that appreciation, then the average woman probably doesn't either. And so that's kind of how the book, The Menopause Myth, was birthed. But my journey has really been so much aligned with my personal experiences, and that has really just kind of informed what the next chapter has always been for me. So this was my next chapter, and so that's how I got here.
I hate that you had to go through that, but I'm so happy that you did, came out on the other side, and now are able to educate other women. I keep hearing that story more and more from gynecologists, like, oh man, I didn't get the training that I know that I need it, but now I've gone through it and I'm going to support other women. So I applaud you for that. And I thank you so much for doing that. So I want to go through some of the myths. When I was reading through the book, I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. Or it feels a little more common to me now because I'm talking about menopause all day long, every day. I have like my young boys are talking about it. It's all we talk about in the house. But you're right. When you wrote the myths, because I'm thinking, yeah, a couple of years ago, I did not even know this existed. And I had my own misconceptions around it. So I want to break down three of them and then have you tell me any additional ones. So first, I want to talk about the fact that every woman will have urinary leakage and there's nothing that we can do about it. You say that that's a myth.
Oh, yeah, that's a total myth. And I mean, that urogenital changes that happen mostly have to do with a decline in estrogen. But also it has to do with the strength of our pelvic floor and, you know, whether you've had childbearing or not, there's just changes your body's going to make. So what I realized was that a lot of women were just like, oh yeah, I'm just peeing my pants and that's kind of how it is. And it's like, yeah, no, you don't have to pee your pants. Sometimes that's happening because what's happening in the vagina actually happens in the urethra. They kind of share real estate. So once the vagina lining thins and has certain issues, that can also kind of be reflected in the urethra tissue. So just by replacing a little bit of estrogen, and that's just topically, not even systemically, then that can really improve. But for a lot of women, there's also that stress urinary incontinence. They laugh, they cough, they sneeze. So there's just a lot of technology out there now that can help strengthen your pelvic floor. You can do it yourself just by really getting in tune with your pelvic floor and understanding what a Kegel really is and doing that work around that. But it is not like, oh, just get this urinary issue and it's just never going to go away. That's not an it. I know you had some, but I have one at top of mind.
Yes.
Because we kind of touched on it, which was around gynecologists knowing, and you may were going to say that, but I don't remember that being in there. But I do want to make this point because I think it's really important for women to know that gynecologists, generally speaking, are not trained in this area. Gynecologists are generally not trained in a lot of areas that don't relate to their woman's reproductive health. So if it's not really around them getting pregnant, staying pregnant, pregnancy, and just normal kind of things that happen around the uterus, there's just not a lot of, there's hardly any training around it. In fact, some gynecologists feel like, well, if you've had a hysterectomy or you've been through menopause, like they literally just dismiss the lower half of your body. Wow. Because they figure if you don't have a uterus, well, what's the point in looking down there? Literally. And that happened just yesterday with a patient that was sharing an experience she had with a provider. So that's just a really important myth that when you go to your gynecologist, I'm not saying you shouldn't have expectations, but you should know that it's not, I don't know if it's not their fault, but they weren't trained. And unless you as a provider go out of your way to learn about this topic, which a lot don't, because if, especially if they're young and they haven't been through it, they don't know. So it really becomes way more apparent as you experience it. And then you're like, wait a minute. Yeah, I just wanted to get that point out there because I think a lot of people get disappointed or frustrated with going to providers that they're not feeling heard, and they're not being heard in a lot of ways, but you just have to find a provider that can help. And the resource to that we can talk about later, but just going to like the Menopause Society site and finding providers that have, you know, taken the effort to be trained. It's just as simple as that.
So that brought up another question for me. So a lot of women assume that after menopause, they don't need to have a Pap test any longer. Is that true or false?
Totally false.
Just wanted to say it.
No. Your Pap smear has nothing to do with really your menopause journey and where you are on it. It has more to do with your history of any abnormal Paps. The screening criteria, I mean, it used to be pretty simple. You just get a Pap every year, go to the doctor, everything's fine. And then it was like, okay, you don't need it every year. Maybe you need it every 2 years or 3 years. Now sometimes 5 years. But where it's moving towards is kind of that risk assessment. So looking at, have you had positive HPV? Have you had an abnormal Pap? And if you've had any abnormality really within a 20-year time period, then we're going, there's like a decision tree. Right. And you're either going to go, you know, okay, totally normal Paps. You can go every 5 years. Okay, you had a HPV, well, then you need to come back next year. Oh, you have this, well, then we need to use this criteria. So there's different pathways, but the menopause, your experience in that doesn't really factor into it.
Yeah, it's just a, you know, one of those myths as well. Like, I'm going through menopause, I don't even need to go back and see my gynecologist. I'm like, yeah, you kind of do need to give
Yeah.
you that air in your body. So yeah, just another myth I've heard. Yeah, thank you very much for pointing that out. And I always lean toward the, well, can you just check a box? Because I want to come back every year. I like want to know, because be 5 years out, there's a lot of things that can happen in your body in a 5 year period, in that waiting
Yeah.
period. So yeah, I always like encourage to figure it out, check a box so I can come
Right.
back.
Well, and the other thing that people don't quite recognize, and I don't even know if the provider recognizes it as much, is that, you can get a well woman exam every year. That's typically, if you have commercial insurance, it's going to be covered. But people, they always associate well woman exams with pap smears. But the truth is, a well woman exam is just to go over the entirety of your health and what's going on. And the pap smear may or may not be a part of that. So I tell patients, yeah, you don't necessarily need a pap smear where I'm going in and scraping cells off your cervix, but you still have a urethra, you still have a pelvic floor, you still have a vagina. Like, there's still other things that could be happening. Just because we're not doing a pap doesn't mean we're not looking at you at all, right?
That's good information to know. And that's why I want to get that out to the audience. So another myth is estrogen is only for controlling hot flashes.
Absolutely a myth. I mean, understandably, people kind of feel that way because that is one of the most bothersome, complaints or issues that women experience. But estrogen has so many other beneficial components to it. And there's a lot of misinformation, unfortunately, around estrogen. And that really stemmed from the Women's Health Initiative study that in the early 2000s. They pretty much did this research, and they kind of just, once they looked at the entirety of it, they kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater and was like, okay, no estrogen for everybody. And then over the years, they've gone back and figured, okay, well, actually, estrogen isn't good to start in a 70-year-old, but it's actually really good to start in a perimenopausal or early menopausal woman because we're going to decrease the risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. We're going to improve bone health. And also, very significantly, we're going to decrease the risk of cardiovascular disease, even decrease your risk of colorectal cancer. So there are so many benefits to estrogen that people don't understand. It's been kind of demonized into, oh, estrogen, breast cancer. It's literally been that connection. But estrogen, and I have this conversation with patients, had that yesterday too, is like, it is a balance of pros and cons, risk benefits. But at the end of the day, estrogen is one of the best tools, in my opinion, to improve your quality of life and allow you to live a very good quality of life, especially, in your later years, because a lot of the issues that we start to experience are because our estrogen levels are declining.
So, and I was going to ask that, like the myths around HRT, and you covered those beautifully. There's also some thought around there's only one way to take hormone replacements, just take it orally. But aren't there, you can use the patch, you can use a cream. Can you talk
Oh yeah.
about that?
There's multiple ways. And I again tell patients it really depends on your lifestyle and what kind of resonates with you. I think we oral estrogen at the end of the day is not the favorite because orally estrogen then has to be metabolized by the liver. That affects certain clotting factors, which ultimately, can increase other risk for you. So if you can avoid taking it orally, that's great. The best way and the safest way we know is transdermally. So a patch, or even these days, like I have patients that are too sensitive to the adhesion on the patch. So there's a gel that you would just apply. And these are all FDA approved drugs. They're not, you don't have to get them compounded. It's another myth that, in order to get bioidentical, it has to be compounded and you've got to go jump through all these hoops. Your doctor can prescribe a what's called bioidentical. All that means is that it's the same composition as what your body would make, as opposed to a horse or a cow or a pig. Because there's a lot of medications that we use that animals, you know, that have similar molecular components of their hormones, we use that. But with estrogen, there's multiple ways to take it. So orally, a patch, a cream, you can do a troche, which is a dissolving little pill you can put under your mouth. That is something that's compounded and probably less accessible. And then finally, there are pellets that you can inject under the skin. And that gets to be controversial. Pellets aren't for everybody, but there's definitely a population of people that do really well with them. So we just, you know, obviously that's a case by case basis, but there are multiple ways. And, you know, it really just depends on what fits your lifestyle.
So with bioidentical versus compounded, bioidentical is bioidentical to a female, not to Stephanie, correct? And then compounded, is that more for Stephanie or is that more not individualized either? Oh, wow. Okay.
So yes and no. So the drug itself is just a bioidentical. It's just for females, right?
Okay.
It's for
okay.
a human female, right? And that's generally what they're getting at. When you compound is when you have the ability to tweak different doses. So like, for example, I have patients that are on estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. Okay. If you have a uterus and you take estrogen, then you have to take progesterone because you have to balance out that estrogen. Otherwise, you're going to increase your risk of endometrial cancer and bleeding and all of that. So you kind of have to take it. Then there's testosterone, which is it's a whole nother conversation, but there are people that are like, I don't want to take three different drugs. I don't want to take an estrogen patch and then a progesterone pill and then a testosterone cream. Like, and there, I have a lot of patients that do all that. But after a while, some people are like, you know, is there an easier way? So the compounding, that comes into play because now we can put all of this in one little pill, troche, or cream or whatever. And we can make it very specific to what Stephanie needs. Stephanie needs a little less estrogen. She needs a little more progesterone. And she actually does well with this amount of testosterone. So the drug itself is the same drug, but the way we put them together and the dosing is what makes it unique to you.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. What other myths are common that I may have missed? What are you hearing?
There's so many. I'm just kind of like, still a little early. One myth is around, probably one I think is one of the bigger ones is probably understanding when it starts. So, you know, a lot of people have this vision like, I'll be 50 something years old when I'm going through menopause. Like it's not even in their consciousness in their late 30s. And that's what happened to me. I started having perimenopausal symptoms. So the myth really is really what menopause is. Menopause, by definition, is really only one day. It's 12 months after your last menstrual cycle. That's a one day thing, right? It's not the one day. It's not about the menopause. It's about the journey through the menopause, right? Everybody's like, the menopause. It's like, yeah, girl, you're already in it. You're already on the road. You've been doing this. You just don't know you're doing it. If you were, like the average age for menopause is between about 45 and 55, and average is probably about 51, 52. So that means that up to 10 years prior to your menopause, you can start having symptoms, irregular menstrual cycles, irritability, worsening PMS, hair loss, all of those things. And so the myth is that somehow it's really not relevant to you until you hit 50, but it really starts to impact you as early as your late 30s, depending on when you were kind of genetically undesigned or whatever, whenever you were going to go through menopause. So for me, I think I was menopausal by the time I was 43-ish. And so I started having symptoms in my late 30s. And women of color, by the way, tend to have more severe symptoms that start earlier and last longer. So the average time, like I said, for women going through this process can be, you know, up to 8 years. And that has a significant impact on your quality of life. And if you're not aware that your hormones are doing all that, the myth is, again, that you're you're just going to somehow, this is going to hit you later on. It's already happening. That's probably one of the biggest myths out there, I think.
How do we know? What should we be looking for? You know, hot flashes probably are number one sign that people see lack of sleep. But what are some other things that women should become more aware of so that they know that they're transitioning?
Well, I think some of the first signs and symptoms are going to be some irregular menstrual cycles. So you might have heavier bleeding. That's more common than anything, is that heavy bleeding. And that comes from the fact that as you get older, you're not ovulating. And that ovulation is what kind of keeps everything in check and balance. You build up the endometrial lining, you ovulate, you make the progesterone, and then you break it down, you have a cycle. And you do that. And you did that for, I don't know, 38, 40 years. You've been doing
right.
that
or right.
whatever, 20 years, however long you've been menstruating. But then when you stop ovulating, that throws that whole cycle off. And so now you're just building up the endometrial lining. You don't have that part of the cycle that allows the everything to go in full circle. So then you start to bleed more, you start to bleed heavier. That's why a lot of women during this time period, late 30s, early 40s, end up getting hysterectomies, because the doctor doesn't really want to, and I'm biased here, but I think a lot of doctors generally don't want to deal with balancing the hormones as much, and they're just like, well, just take the uterus out, bleed, just take it out. That's fortunately or unfortunately what happens to a lot of women during that period because of that irregular bleeding. Worsening PMS, irritability, insomnia. And then there's some, I mean, hot flashes really, for a lot of people, the hot flashes and night sweats don't come till later.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the other things that you don't even recognize, like joint pain is actually on that list. They keep increasing the list of symptoms. It was 30 something. Now I heard it's 50 something. So there's frozen shoulder. There's tonight, like, I don't, there's all type of things that people are like, oh,
and
dry mouth and my gums shifting. And
yeah,
but that's also things that happen. Like you're going to have things that are happening in your mouth, things that are happening to your eyesight. I mean, your body is
raising my hand because I had that and that and that.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was going through this, I was having all these issues with my mouth. I had to get a root canal and I was like, what is happening? I've never had these issues. And then all of a sudden, but it's all had to do with the perimenopause and your estrogen. So I just never connected what was going on with my dental health with
right.
what was going on. And I think I didn't even realize that till after I wrote the book, that I was like, oh, that was happening too. So the symptoms, the list goes on and on and on. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, just being aware of your body. And when you start to see changes, start asking questions. And if your gynecologist cannot answer them, find another gynecologist who can answer those questions. I would say you are the consumer. So take control of that situation. That's so important to do. So we talked a little bit about HRT and some other remedies. Do you ever recommend any natural remedies or alternative therapies for your patients?
Actually, almost always. Everybody that I see, I always ask them to do what's called the food elimination diet. It's basically taking out gluten, dairy, sugar, alcohol, soy, and a lot of those foods that are triggers, especially sugar, and just see how you feel, because your body does tend to be more sensitive to certain things. Your gut health actually also changes during this period. I generally recommend everybody do that, so that they can have a better appreciation, because it's not about just giving you some estrogen to feel better. It's about understanding what's changing in your body. What are some of those habits, things that you're doing that your body's like, I don't really like this. So yeah. It's a combination of that. So I'm looking at your gut health. I'm looking at just that mind-body connection, which sounds very cliche-ish. I mean, I have read about this for years and talked about it, but I think until you really, really get how important it is to be present and understand the mind-body connection, like I can't even put it in words, because it really does affect. I mean, this period isn't about just hormone changes and a period and, you know, just hot flashes. It's also about you transitioning, you're going into a new phase of life. And we're constantly evolving, going through these changes, but those transition periods are what is where it can be a little tumultuous and where we get a little confused. It's just like puberty, yeah. Right? We go from being childhood into our reproductive years, but we go through this transition and we have a better appreciation for it during puberty, but we're really literally going through the exact same thing. The hormones are actually doing a very similar thing. They're very erratic. They're changing. And I mean, it affects even what you think. This is really more than, again, just about a hormone, but it's about really also taking those assessments of your own personal life. Again, that gets really deep. And a lot of times people just, they're not ready or they don't want to do that work, but it's work. It's work.
It's a lot of work. So one question that I did have for you is like, how does it affect your sexual health? And are there strategies that men and women can have to maintain intimacy during this time?
Yeah, so it's going to have potentially effect on your sexual health. For most women, it's going to affect them where they have a less libido. That's been my experience. I mean, there are a couple of women that have more, but the average woman has less than I see. A lot of that has to do with their sleep and their fatigue, vaginal dryness or pain that leads to pain with intercourse. So then they just are like, I don't want to do that. You can correct a lot of those issues just by getting in front of it with just some vaginal estrogen to keep things, as I say, juicy. Mm-hmm. Because once you start having pain with intercourse, then, you know, it kind of goes downhill because it's kind of defeating half the purpose or the purpose. So, and understand that your partner is also going through technically andropause, but menopause. They're going through changes too. Their sexual function is changing. And so that's just like a topic that nobody really gets educated on, but it's real. Like things don't work the same way and you have to put a little more effort in or sometimes take a little pill or do some things. Like it's just not happening the same way. So just that awareness and openness to address it and not just feel like, oh, this is, you know, like something's wrong with you or that you should just have to accept it. There's just a lot that can be done.
Yeah. And I just want to jump back one time to something you mentioned before around cultural and societal factors. I know that there's a study called the Swan Study where they look at menopause and as it relates to different cultures and so forth. Talk to us a little bit about that. Maybe not particularly the study, but how it impacts us differently culturally.
Yeah, the Swan Study, what they really were looking more at is more of the symptoms that different groups of women have. So Hispanic women, Caucasian women, Asian women, and African-American women. And in terms of the experience, I'm not aware of any data around how they experience it, like mentally, culturally, but really more physically. So for example, Black women are going to typically report more symptoms and look, it appears that they have those symptoms longer. They tend to have more severity of their hot flashes. Asian women tend to have less hot flashes. That is probably more due to their diets and their diets having soy in them and just their diets in general being cleaner. Women and, you know, Caucasian women have generally been the standard of what's been studied. So that's kind of been considered the quote unquote normal, but each group kind of experiences a little different based on whatever those differences are in their, you know, in their groups. And nobody really knows why Black women have this more. I have my own guess. I think it has to do with stress and just inflammation. And I'm sure diet also plays a role. So I think there's things, it's not just culturally as a group. I think women in general approach it pretty similarly. There are some groups that probably look at it maybe a little differently in terms of what they might do. So for example, African-American women may be less likely to accept any type of medication or hormone treatment based on the experiences of trusting or not trusting a medical establishment. So there's all types of different reasons why people will have a different, may have a different experience. It's not necessarily always unique to the body. I think the body generally experience it very similarly, but how we are otherwise conditioned, or our groups, you know, in terms of, again, diet and what other expectations, how would affect it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I like the way that you said that. Yeah. Two more quick questions for you. What are you reading or listening to right now?
I am reading Buddhism Plain and Simple right now. And I am loving that book, and I'm listening to a lot of Eckhart Tolle. And so those are kind of my sweet spots. I just got back from Asia, and I got to be in the presence of some beautiful Buddhas. And I've always had an affinity for Buddhism in general, but I just, based on how life's been going lately, I'm like, I need something. So I started reading this book, and it's been actually, it's life-changing. So I highly recommend it. So that's what I'm reading and listening to.
Amazing. I will make sure that goes in the show notes. How can we find you? How can folks find you?
You know, the usual Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, I guess TikTok. And I'm not going to lie, I do, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with all of this, but it's just Dr. Ariana at all of those places. And that's how you'll find me. And then I have a website, Dr. Ariana, so I'm pretty easy.
Okay. All right. Perfect. I will make sure that all of the links are in the show notes. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I appreciate it. And for educating the audience. Thank you again. Everyone.
You're welcome.
Yes. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to Hello Hot Flash, where we help you control the midlife change. Make sure to check out the show notes, where we include links to all of the subjects that we covered today. Here's to your health. I am launching a limited series podcast, Christian Women and Menopause, strategies for midlife women who want to know what the Bible says about menopause symptoms like stress, lack of confidence, anxiety, and depression. Christian Women and Menopause is a limited series, so there are only 21 episodes. Episodes will drop one per day starting Tuesday, April 23rd. Check out Christian Women in Menopause on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Christian Women in Menopause, a limited series brought to you by Hello Hot Flash.